Hey, you got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. We're going to do the weather now. Now I'm in trouble. The overnight low, it says minus one. Something's gone horribly wrong with the forecast because it tells us we're getting minus three on Friday, minus four next week overnight. And temperatures, this looks like Invercargill's weather to me. Snow, is that a snow symbol? Yeah, something's gone horribly wrong. So we're going to flick over to this other system for Thursday. Tomorrow, your weather for Thursday, high of 17 degrees. Bit of rain, bit of wind, even some lightning it's suggested here. And Friday and Saturday got some rain as well, around 15, 17 degrees. All right, I'm going to play for you Hatchie's track Adored when we come back. Marie's here in the studio with me. We'll be doing our Let's Talk segment. Hey, you got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. That's Hatchie with Adored. And in the studio, I've got Marie. Welcome to the studio, Marie.
Morning, Aaron. And whaingaroa. It's really great to be here in the studio with you, Aaron.
Yeah, we haven't. You've been doing your show every week for quite a while, except for the weeks you didn't do it, but you've had things on. But it's probably been a couple of months since we've had you in the morning show.
Oh, I know.
How are you feeling? Because I've got control of the mixing desk and you haven't.
We'll see how that goes.
We'll see how that goes. We might leap
we
across.
We might naturally
and,
just reach over and do
yeah,
something.
Grab, put my fader down so she can talk instead.
There we go. Yeah, that, yeah, hey, that could work.
No,
I know what to do.
That
now.
Won't work.
Oh man, this is cool.
It'd be
okay,
a rumble,
let's go for
a rumble
it.
In the studio with Councillor
Marie. Background
with Councillor Marie.
It's good to be here, Aaron.
Yes. Yeah, so for those who don't know, Marie is a local counsellor and therapist. Are you still counselling? Because mm-hmm. you've kind of stepped back. You're still doing.
Yep.
Are you, but are you taking on new clients though? Because
I have taken on the odd one.
Because I thought you weren't going to do it anymore.
There you go.
So you're, okay. We're going to say on the air that you're not available for new clients, I think.
No. Yeah. Okay. We can say that.
Because otherwise. Yeah.
I've toned down my work a lot, Aaron. But if I do find that somebody, you know, there's a really good fit there. Yeah, I definitely will be.
Because that is counseling. An important thing, isn't it, too? Like the chemistry between the two, the counsellor and the counsellee.
Yeah, and if the person's really wanting to do the work. You know, so I'm off all the contract work, which I really am pleased about.
Oh,
just working privately now.
Oh, I see. Right, yeah. Okay. So we call it a Let's Talk segment, and there's several things we want to talk about today. I think the first thing, if you were listening earlier in the show, I talked about how there's been this sudden burst in live music, like almost a 50% increase between 2022 and 2023's the money made, basically. That's how they're measuring it, the 100 highest grossing live tours worldwide. And this article, I've got to recommend this guy, Ted Gioia. Gioia spelled G-I-O-I-A, if you want to understand what's happening in the Western culture around the world, music culture, and he goes across into main world culture as well. He's so insightful. One of the things he's talking about too, he moves on from there to say, you know, people are hungry for this live, real sort of inspirational experience that they're not getting out of Spotify because there's so much plastic music, and nowadays quite a lot of AI music used to fill up playlists because that's cheaper for Spotify. He then went on to talk about too about the results, and this is something I've been waiting to hear really. We're talking about people on their cell phones with getting the dopamine stimulus, the doom scrolling they call it, and people are coming out of that. At the end of that, you don't actually feel uplifted because you've just been kept tapping, tap, 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 or scroll. And this is naturally, because we're human beings, it's going to funnel us away from that in the end and into like the live music experience is a real full human experience.
It's interesting you're using the word real, you know, and I think about the reels that we watch on
not that real,
not even that real, you know, it's a different word.
An unreal reel.
But it's the same word but has a different meaning.
Yeah.
And often that's, you know, like life, you know, we it has two meanings for us.
I wonder if they chose it that way when they chose the word reels.
Probably.
They're like, yeah, because we're
real life.
It's real.
Yeah, and at the time, it probably was, until people got the idea that they could play act or show certain bits of their life and it looked amazing. And then we went into this fantasy world and creating experiences that were just small moment experiences. But when we watch it visually online, we think, oh, man, everyone else is having so much fun out there and, like, doing all of that, and what am I doing? You know, and then we just and then we realize, oh, what am I doing? I'm sitting here watching what you're doing, you know, and then we come full circle again. And of course, we'll go down a little bit because we realize we're just watching other people's lives. And then it's not real. We're just watching a reel.
an unreal. I think there's a fear out there that this is it for humanity forever. We're going to be stuck on devices. And Mark Zuckerberg's vision is that we're going to be wearing these things that got on our faces. And so we're always in the virtual reality, which will be better than real reality. And they talk about, you know, and there's kids gaming and getting sucked into gaming, and girls getting sucked into Instagram, and it's bad for their mental health. But I've always believed that they'll push it too far. And they pretty much are. I mean, we're starting to see the effect of that. They push it too far, and they will be the masters of their own demise, because you can't just keep people at a peak all the time. Like there's drug users who've tried that. They've tried to stay high forever, and it just doesn't work. The body just doesn't do that. And that's what the cell phone is. It's trying to keep you on your dopamine peak forever. And we're human beings, and I'm interested to see what happens next.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think we are seeing what's happening next right now. It's about noticing it and you know, all congratulations for our young people. I think that they're more onto it than we like to give them credit, that they are the ones who are actually moving away from the social media and the reels and the, you know, taking photos of your dinner and putting it online. You know what I mean?
Like, that's for us Generation X's.
I think they're
doing
over
that.
It was fun. I mean, our younger generation are kind of like that. They are quick fix, you know, in the moment, what's happening. And of course, the internet and all of that gave us this great moment of like, wow, something exciting.
This is amazing.
Like crazy.
I remember getting emails for the first time. It was like,
exactly. So you got the new frontier. The new frontier is always exciting until you have to fight the battles of the new frontier. And the battles for us have been, of course, the demise in our mind health and how we see life and how we see real things. Yeah. And I think our young people are onto it. I think it's more our generation, well, your generation, my generation, and the older generation who are really struggling with
us. Are we not the same generation, Maria?
I don't know. Let's not say the age group, okay? You look older than me anyway.
Well, that's because of the beard. If you had my beard, you'd look older as well.
Oh, that's crazy. We're not doing that. I'm so not woke.
No, well, Maki can use Photoshop to rig up a beard for you. We'll just get her to do that.
I'll sue you.
She's very skilled. All right, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Marie.
You can't even sue in New Zealand. I'd have to go to America.
Well, you can't you?
I don't think you can. Can you? Oh, well, someone
you
else can
tell you
us
can,
that
but
one.
It's not quite the same.
Oh.
Yeah, like we created ACC so people were not suing each other for physical and health-related harm.
Interesting. Well, there you go. I'm going to ACC then.
You go to ACC.
Yeah, because you disturbed me mentally to put a bed on me would be just not right, Aaron.
It's very interesting. It's very strange where this discussion's gone already.
It has. So let's bring it back to
the resilience of our not just just the adaptability. I think we forget about that. It's the young ones that are adaptable.
Mm, of course they are. They're amazing. Incredible.
And we spent, like I spent my childhood being told I watched too much TV and my eyes were going to go square and it was going to damage me.
Yes.
And as soon as we got, I don't think I talked about this on the radio yesterday. Apologies if I did. When I was in a student hostel and there was it was in a multi-story building in Auckland, 10 stories or more than that. Two of the floors had TVs on them, and we used to go and sometimes we want to watch. And there was a TV room as well, specifically, and we'd go and watch things occasionally on there. But we noticed that the floors without the TVs had more fun because everyone on the other floors was like, shh, shh, you know, shushing everyone so they could watch.
Of course.
And then, so in our second year, me and a friend of mine, when we had our first ever, we have a meeting at the start of the year with all the people on your floor, and the warden for that floor, you know, starts it off, and they say, we've got to decide if we want a TV on the floor. And me and my friend argued vigorously that we didn't want a TV, that it would be way more fun, and all the first years got the message, and so we didn't have a TV. And so the next year, every floor did that. No one wanted a TV.
Mm.
So these are all the kids who everyone had wailed and moaned that they were watching too much TV. As soon as they got somewhere where there was some fun, lively stuff to happening, they were like, we don't need the TV anymore. And occasionally it'd be like one show a week. I think Blackadder was the big thing to watch.
Oh, yeah,
so we would go and find a TV and watch Blackadder, you know, once a week. And that would be all the TV, or the All Blacks might be playing and you know, half the hostel would want to see that.
Mm.
So I just think that sort of thing will play out also with our young people, and they will, I mean, I know they're up against something stronger,
absolutely.
You know, it's much more powerful.
Yeah.
But I think what that means is that you get sucked in for longer. And then you feel even worse, because that's what we're discussing before about this dopamine loop, the doom loop, is that at the end of it, you ultimately feel worse, and it might take longer to get to the point where you want to walk away from it, but then you probably feel really strong. It feels even more stronger about walking away.
Mm.
That's my theory. I'm not the counsellor.
Yeah.
But I feel quite excited about this possibility.
I think there's huge possibility, although I just wanted to go back a little bit when you said, you know, where the TV was, when you walked into the room, everyone was like, shh, 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 because we're watching TV, you know, we're watching the movie. And that brought back quite a strong feeling in me, one I don't like. When I used to come home from school or something, and my dad would be sitting in his chair watching TV, watching the 6 o'clock news, or he'd be watching sports, and I have not the best memories of how much TV took my dad away from me, that I didn't have those. You know, we used to have the conversations around the dinner table. So the TV was a big, you know, we'd get together at night and we'd sit down and watch TV and everything was like, shh, 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 shh. Yeah, and I hated that. I hated that because I wanted to interact and I wanted to play and I wanted to do family. And we did do that too. There was definitely that there. But the TV was a, yeah, it played that big part of, it gave us the impression that it brought family together. But it also, playing that out, it shut us down because we stopped talking. Everything was like, shh, shh, shh.
I had this, I have this experience of, because I also didn't have, when I was flatting, I often didn't have a TV as well. We moved into this flat and we realised none of the four of us owned a TV. And we were like, oh, we just won't have a TV. And it was a fun flat to be in, which a lot of my flats weren't. But I remember at one point in my life, you know, you drive around in the evening and you can see people watching TV in their houses. Yeah. And you felt a sense of kinship because that's what you used to do. But after I had not had the TV on in the house for a few years, I'd drive around and it felt kind of sinister.
Yeah.
Like everyone was being fed the same thing.
Yeah, it's quite a sad feeling.
Yeah, and it was amazing what the shift was entirely within me and about my relationship with the television.
Yeah, and you were young then, and we've got to remember that that our young people can often think a lot clearer than we can and
they've got see the energy, things. They've got the energy to
change. And they want to do life, and we have to realise that as we get older, we are shifting in our energy levels, what we want to do, how much we can do, and we forget about that young feeling when there was no pain in the body and everything was just like life was, you know, full on and you wanted to be engaged with it. And that has not stopped for our young people. That chunk of our younger generation still have that drive to want to live and experience life. And yes, momentarily they got caught in the internet. Momentarily, you know, they got sidetracked. But they're cleverer than that. They started to realise that a whole lot of this stuff was toxic. It's just toxic for them. I had my son over the other day and his girlfriend, and they were like, they're not even on the internet. They're just not even doing it. They're not scrolling. They're not bringing their phones out. Their phones are there.
Yeah.
And they're still part, you know, of what they bring into the home. You know, bring your phone with you.
Well, they are tremendously useful.
They're our connectors in many ways. And that's what
makes
well.
That's what makes it hard for people who try to have a 100% detox or go cold turkey.
Yeah.
Is damn things are useful.
Well, my encouragement there, and I say this to my husband, you know, and he may be listening. He's like, no, don't go there. I'm going to go there. He was out gardening. Yeah, he's always gardening. He loves his garden.
That's totally
who he is.
Yeah.
And I'm really wrapped with that. But I watched him one day, and he had his phone with him, and it's quite a sad story for me because I watched him in the garden, and I must have seen him pull out his phone like four or five times. It buzzed off about something, or maybe somebody wanted something or something, and when his phone buzzes, he interacts with it. Like he doesn't think, oh, I won't interact with that. He just instantly interacts with it.
It's very hard not to.
Well, actually,
that's how they're designed.
Yeah, well, I mean, I encourage him to turn the volume down so he's not hearing that dinging going off.
I think there should be a no phone in the garden rule.
Well, here we go. I'm getting there, Aaron.
I'm sorry.
It's my story.
Sorry.
So I'm watching him and I couldn't believe it. This beautiful picture that I have of him in the garden, and he's just, you can see he's loving his environment and he's engaged with it. And then to watch him be interrupted all the time by picking up his phone, putting it down, putting it back in his pocket, you know. And when he came inside, I said, man, hon, you know, I've never seen you out in the garden doing that with your phone, like always reacting to it every time it goes off, you know. And he must have heard me because it was a disturbing picture for me. That is not peace and calm and how I know engage.
And he must have been feeling it too, I think.
Yeah, I could see the stress in him every time. And he'd come in like a little bit like, he's not calm, he's stressed. And I'm thinking, well, you haven't even been out in the garden, really. You've just...
Your body was there, but your mind
wasn't. Yeah, that's it, not engaging.
Yeah.
And so he's not taking his phone out there anymore, Aaron. And I have him back out in the garden doing what I know PJ loves to do, free in his mind, free in the, you know, in everything around him. And I think that's what you're talking about. We engage with our phones and we become prisoners again. But my encouragement is you can put it down. There is nothing that pressing. It does not matter if you don't answer that email or that question or that text. Or, you know, and if something really bad is happening in your family, I can guarantee you, you will hear about it. You're not going to be the one left out. You will get the information from somewhere.
Yeah.
At the moment, you know, and it's probably not going to happen in the moment that you want to put your phone down. So my encouragement, you know, if you're going for a walk, if you're out in the garden, if you're doing your laundry, if you're house cleaning, put your phone away. Just put it away. Put it in your bag. Put it somewhere where you can't just walk past it and pick it back up. Actually, put it away.
I also want to introduce a thought as well, and some people aren't going to like this, I think, but I think when we look at our young people at school age ones, who I think the time, like certainly for us, the time with the TV, and I think the time online is like downtime, time out, because we're stressed.
Absolutely.
And because we've got, like, we're feeling pressure, and I think, like, as an introvert, I'm a very gregarious person, so that side of school I loved having people around me, but it must be exhausting for introverts, like, to be at school all day. It's a very noisy environment.
I agree, because I'm an introvert.
It's an alarmingly busy environment.
And I actually use exactly what you just said. It's downtime for me. I can stop. Sometimes I have to check myself, because I've been there far too long doing nothing, and I'm loving it. I'm just doing nothing, really. But then I engage with life fully. You know, I can put my phone down, and I'm not concerned. I won't even answer it at times, Aaron, because I think, okay, well, I'll check the number, and if it's, you know, that important, I'll ring them back, or I'll send them a text.
And so that engagement thing, I think a lot of the time spent watching TV for our generation and time online these days, I think we've got it around the wrong way. I think it's a symptom of disengagement. I think I'm talking about the kids who are introverts at school, and school's exhausting, but also the kids who weren't getting very good grades who were feeling pressure about their grades, or the kids who weren't behaving properly, which I'm now saying most of the kids who are at school, they're feeling that. I don't think it's that healthy an environment. In fact, I know it's not. People get bullied, right? Like, bullying is free reign for bullies at school, no matter what anyone tries to tell you. We all saw that when we were at school, and we all experienced it. We were all on one side of it or the other. So getting home from school and sitting down going blah in front of the TV makes perfect sense in that environment. And here's the bit that people won't like hearing, but I know a lot of homeschooled kids, and they were on average more engaged than school kids in life and more passionate about things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Their drive is stronger.
Yeah. And they also had more time, of course, to indulge their passions.
Yeah.
But they also meant they had their best energy saved for their passions rather than after school when they were already tired.
I agree.
So I think we need to recognize that sometimes, I mean, the social media is causing problems, yes, but it's also a symptom. And people who are really engaged and passionate about life and not getting caught up in social media.
I agree. Yeah. And I don't think it's the picture that, you know, we need to be careful the words we're using and the things that we believe that come through the news or the airwaves, because that's where we get our information.
That's a whole nother story as well about the news.
We need to be careful, because then we start to believe a lie. Right, and then we start to look at our younger generation as though they aren't present. And I'm going to challenge people. I think they are more present than ever. I think they are
more present than we are.
There we go. And there's the challenge. It's us that isn't present. It's the adults. It's us that needs to take the responsibility. Yeah, stop trying to pass it off onto our young people like this is a problem for them, when they've already suggested to us that it's actually not a problem for us, that we're probably going to move away from this rather than keep engaging with it. It's actually a problem for you guys, because you keep engaging with it and bringing it up and making it our problem, when I can say many young people, I can talk to many youth, younger generation, who aren't engrossed with this.
I've had experiences like standing around. I remember taking my daughter over to soccer practice in Cambridge, and the dads are standing around. And most of the dads are standing there blinking like they're most of them were like professional workers, and they've been head down in their work all day and sacrificing a lot of their life force for their work. And we're all standing there in the sun blinking, right? And and our energy is really flat. And there were two guys there who weren't, both of whom weren't white. One was I think he was from Kenya, and another was a Maori guy who'd done badly at school, but they had become a manager at EQC because he actually was super talented. So he got school C and that was it, and was still doing that. So those are the only two guys who were exuding energy, and we gravitated toward them because they were fun, but the rest of us were like just standing there blinking in the exhausted sunlight, wondering what had... Yeah, and
well, you're getting a breath of fresh air, so even that for your body would have been like a shock to the system.
But we were disengaged from this, like standing there in a field completely disengaged from that environment.
It is very freeing when we... and that word disengage, it can mean different things. But in this context, I think it is good to disengage from, especially our generation. And I'm going to be careful. Our generation, particularly, I'm going to nail. I think that for some of our older people, the internet is fabulous. We've got a lot of lonely people out there, and they're the ones who really do need to. We need to help them engage so that they can use this tool in a really healthy way that's good for them. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I think it's our generation, really, that it's really affected. And if you have a look around in our own community, just have a look around how many are walking around with phones that are our generation and how many of our young people are. You know, kind of make the connections here, because I think it's us that has the biggest problem.
Mm. Yeah, there's something about the process of becoming, especially for professional guys, where it's never stated, but you're basically expected to give the best of yourself to your job. And the compensation is you get well paid and you get social status. And
oh, for industrialization, eh?
Yeah.
And all it brought.
But yeah, and then you spat out at the other end tired and bewildered.
Like this little conveyor belt. It's terrible when you see it in the cartoon form. You know, I've seen it. You know, somebody comes in really healthy and they've come from these green fields and great oxygen and they've got lots of energy, and then they get on the elevator, you know, whatever that thing is called, of life.
The conveyor belts.
Conveyor belt, there we go, of life. And we see them go through the industrialized stage where they get into work and the energy gets sucked out and the beautiful light that they had in them and gets dulled. And you just see a shell of a person come out the other side trying to find what they had at the beginning, which is really sad.
I mean, there used to be the idea that you'd retire and you could do all the things that you always wanted to do. But at that point, you've forgotten what you wanted to do and you're only good at doing your job.
Isn't it interesting that we believe this stuff in our lifetime? But you've got to realise it's just our lifetime. Every lifetime, that story gets spun around again to another person's lifetime. Because the reality is, as we get older and the health of our nation is not good, we're not going to be healthy in our old age unless we've looked after ourselves. So where is this great reward of getting older? Most old people, we tend to hide them away. We don't want their wisdom. We don't want to know the stories. They're usually shuttled away in homes where we don't see most of our old people. And the ones that are getting around, we're ignoring. So what is so wonderful about this stage of life that we all are gearing up for? I think we need to change it a little bit. I like how the Chinese looked after their old people and knew that there were wisdom in the older generation and knew that they were to be valued, that they'd given something and now it was time to give back, you know. We've lost those kind of nurturing and respectful ways of looking at people as we get older now. Now it's a sickness. So I'm not happy about this at all, Aaron. I want to change the whole concept around this because we don't – wisdom grows in time.
So, Marie, through experience. Let me ask you, what are you going to do for your retirement?
Oh, I'm going to fight to the bitter end, Aaron. I'm going to keep going and keep giving it out there. I think, I have such a love for just humanity and this beautiful place that we live on, that I'll never give up trying to spread some goodness out there. Yeah, it'll always be in me. It will always be there because it's that important. We all need to champion something, because we only have one lifespan, don't we? So what do we want to do with it? I don't want to get to a certain age and then get cast out the conveyor belt off the other side. I'm gonna still be speaking truth into generations to come, hopefully.
Mm. It's now a good time to talk about David Seymour.
Ooh,
you want to go there?
I want to so go there. My dear David
It's not specifically him we want to talk about.
He's a human being.
He's a useful platform to talk about things, I think, for our purposes.
Yeah, and I guess it's...
Speaking of disengaged people.
Yeah, well, that's what I think that, you know, what he's trying to do out there in his bandwagon. I look at the mind health of our nation and individuals and culturally, whatever. And none of this is healthy for us when people come along and they want to disrupt cause discord, really. Mm. That's what he's doing. He's causing discord.
Because it creates benefit, it creates votes for him.
Yeah. And the very foundation of our country is founded on, the Treaty of Waitangi, needs to be held in high regard. And there's nothing in me that ever thinks that any foundational document should be tampered with in any way. It wasn't put there to cause us harm. It was put there to bring cultures together and for us to learn to work together, which we're still struggling to do. And what David's doing will cause so much disruption in our mental health, mind health. It's not just our reaction to it, Aaron. We get displaced when you start to muck with the very fabric of who we are, our stories. Everything comes from our cultural well-being. The good stories, the good, the bad, the ugly, it doesn't matter. They're all the stories that make up who we are. If you start messing with that, then those stories get messed with too. They lose their power. They lose their impact. And suddenly we just become all New Zealanders. Well, it doesn't work like that. That we have a history here that we need to retain.
It's kind of whitewashing. That sounds like whitewashing history.
Well, it is, and it's just saying we're all equal, we're all the same, and there is nothing here that we hold any kaupapa to.
Well, I mean, we're clearly not all the same.
We're clearly not
all the
same.
Ideologically it would be nice to say we're all the same, but the reality is we're not,
and
we've had different experiences. All our families that we've all come from have had different experiences through history.
And the trauma that comes with that, and the aroha that comes with that. We want all of it because it makes up the fabric of who we are. And we need to get correct what our ancestors wanted at the beginning, which was a coming together of and a looking after of. And I think that if we're going to tamper with the foundations of who we are, then that just opens the door to tamper with so much more. And we will keep, I put it on the table. Would the Americans ever change the Declaration of Independence? That founding document is what the country is born out of. And the Treaty of Waitangi is what we're born out of. And we, David Seymour is bringing discord into a nation that doesn't need it. It's a red herring. We've got far greater things to be worried about than what he's doing. And it's a dishonour to us as a nation, people.
That's actually something I think of him. He's a very, and I hardly ever use this word before, but he's a very dishonourable person because he's misleading people about the situation, the current situation.
Hmm.
And he never talks about what's actually in the treaty. He never talks about the wording of the treaty. He's talking about some treaty legislation that interprets the treaty, is the way I'd describe
it.
He's very clever, and I've watched him, and he's very, very slippery.
Mm. It's like a little rat that comes in the beautiful bag of grain and just nibbles away at the edge, you know, until all the great grain that we had slowly starts to disappear.
But the urge is that we see the damage he's doing and we want to fight him.
Well, I'd like to be in the room with him. I'd like to have a conversation with him. I do think he's an antagonist. Yeah, I do.
Oh, very much.
But he doesn't bother me. Like, that doesn't bother me because
go as a counsellor, don't you, into that environment.
And there's real fundamental flaws in his argument that I would love to pull out. And what I want to encourage people to do is listen to his language. Okay, don't listen to just the story he's putting out there and react to the fact that he's wanting to tamper with our treaty. Listen to the language he is using when he speaks and pull out some of the language because an antagonist is very quick to give something out. But if you were to relay back some of the way he speaks, he would have to be answerable to that, and he's not answerable to anything he is speaking out there.
The media's not doing a very good job because I don't feel like they know what's in the treaty either.
I don't think it's the media. I don't want to trust the media.
No, they should be doing a better job of confronting him, and I guess some of them are trying, but he's also super skilled in that environment. You have to be a very, very skillful
and you get
interviewer
a moment,
to cope with him.
A moment in time, Aaron, that's unfair.
The other thing too is that we keep wanting to deal with him on the level of logic and say, logically what you're saying doesn't make sense, blah, 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 blah. But he's talking through to his followers and his voters.
Pushing
emotional buttons and pushing fear buttons and values as well. Like that's the level that he's communicating on. So communicating on a logical, legal level sometimes is useful, but it's not always the case. And especially when what he's doing is stoking fear in people, right? Fear of the other is what he's stoking in people. So you can't go to those people and try to argue logic with them when they're feeling fear. And you certainly, if you go to them and accuse them of being racists, then all you're going to do, you may be right, but all you're going to do is further entrench them and further strengthen. The more we fight David Seymour, the stronger he becomes.
Well, actually, there's got to be another way. I encourage people to listen to his language. There will be things in his language that are exposing who he is. Even his personality type. Nothing fits the kaupapa of our Treaty of Waitangi. He does not fit the coming together of what was talked about when we signed.
He's definitely not about coming together, is he?
No. And so he doesn't even understand the principles, the heart behind the treaty. So why would we ever want to give anybody any sense of power to speak into it? I think the best thing that's come out of this is probably the Māori King and him having a voice that is more heard. I encourage people to listen what's happening over that way. Because I don't follow all this. I am no expert in any of this, but the bits and pieces, I do pick up the heart of things. And I do think that he is driving towards the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi. And if any voice we could be listening to out there that might be encouraging and uplifting and bringing together, it's our Māori King at the moment. And I want people to hear we have a king in this country, no, not of lineage, but put there because we needed something to be put there. Thank goodness he was. Somebody had insight all those years ago to make this happen, because now we have a voice that is going to speak the heart of the treaty, and may it grow, because David Seymour brings discord, and Pākehās or an English way or a British way or whatever we want to look at it, the Crown way of dealing with discord is in a court of law. You know, we like to, you know, get the truth out there and nail it. There, you know, that's us. We're gnarly.
One of the things we're doing though now is we are. I feel like, I mean, some of what we're saying is useful, but we're also occupying that space of worry and fear. And the thing that is an antidote to the fear mongering is a positive vision. It's soothing, and it's something to rally around. And unfortunately, in a political leadership, I don't see anyone really with that certainly successfully championing a positive vision, like a la Martin Luther King. Like, I have a dream, right?
Mm.
That speech, I have a dream. Like, here's the prize.
Yeah.
Keep your eye on the prize.
Yeah.
And the prize for us is a future where all the cultures in this country successfully live together and work together, and everyone thrives, and everyone can thrive. So it's not an us against them scenario where we can only thrive if they don't thrive.
In actual fact, David Seymour thinking.
Yeah, we will thrive more if everyone thrives.
Mm.
Like, that's, and this is, I mean, economically, all the experts say that when you've got huge disparities in wealth, it's bad for the whole economy.
Mm.
And I extrapolate that to this whole scenario here, is when we cannot fully thrive until we all are thriving, and we can all thrive. And we have in the past. This is the thing I learned from
the treaty
workshop pre-1840, and before the Crown started to betray the treaty, or have whatever word you want to use for that. Māori and Pākehā were working together for mutual benefit. It was an amazing vision that I didn't know anything about because, you know, trading and working together and sharing knowledge
and
all that sort of stuff. Like, it was a really beautiful vision. So we've actually done it before. We've done it.
Mm.
We have lived together and for mutual benefit, with everyone thriving together. So it can be done.
Mm.
But my question is, where is the leader with that vision?
Mm.
Because that's the antidote to David Seymour.
Well, I'd like to put it out there again. I'd look towards the Māori King.
Maybe he is that person.
Yeah, well, I do. I genuinely, I'm not just saying this, I'm genuine when I say it. And, you know, I think it's a heart response. Sure, the head and the heart need to work together, but we need to have a heart response right now, because causing chaos is in every respect of being human is not healthy for us. It's not healthy for our mind health, Aaron. People are going to go down so quickly, and of course we get aggressive because, and like I've said many, many times, okay, our emotional reaction, we will go to anger because we don't want to go to hurt, because hurt, you know, we want to cry.
Hurts.
We want to cry. And, I mean, I can't go to David Seymour and just cry my eyes out. You know, I mean, that's not going to work, because actually I'm hurting. And most of our nation is hurting over this.
But that would be funny, though, because he'd be very uncomfortable with that.
Well, he wouldn't. He may even mock me. He may laugh at that.
Which would be his defence, right? He'd actually be uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. He would be uncomfortable with it. But the fact is, we're all hurting, but we don't want to go to the mai-mai. We want to go to, well, we don't want to. Our natural instinct is to go to anger. So now we want to protect and fight for. And, you know, why wouldn't we? So sometimes we've got to be careful that we aren't stopping our natural way of responding because we're afraid of, you know, the David Seymours out there. Well, he doesn't have a problem speaking out and saying whatever he wants to cause that reaction in us without even once thinking, how is the health of this nation? Am I
that's the
growing
thing that's
it?
So dishonorable
am I
about dis- him.
Or am I pulling it down? So he has no care for the people, and the people is what the Treaty of Waitangi is all about. The people, the people, the people. He tangata, he tangata, he tangata.
Hmm. And do we go now? We can move into because we talk about because we are all angry at the moment, or so many of us are more angry. Yeah, and we need to find a way, I think, to see the good in others. Like it's no good, this is what I was saying before, it's no good us just pointing the finger at David Seymour's supporters and saying, oh, you people are racist, you're awful. Like, that's not gonna...
I'm not even sure I would say that to
you. No, but many are, and I certainly feel the urge to do that, but they are... fully rounded human, well, maybe not fully rounded human
still
beings.
A minority,
they're complex. Too. They're complex human beings.
Oh, I want to say that.
And there's of course, but it's but the discussion is dominating at the moment.
Okay, so
it's bringing that vibe with them,
because that's minority voices, and that's what they do when the majority shuts up and says nothing, and the minority have the voice, supposed to believe a lie, like we're hearing something for the first time that we never knew. Okay, we've already known what minorities talk about, these voices out there that are minority voices. Is they're not telling us anything that we don't already know. It's not in the majority voice because we don't all believe it. Majority aren't going to go with it.
I think a lot, while he hasn't got many voters, and there's a lot of people who feel some sympathy for that.
That's okay, that they can.
That somehow the privilege has been inverted in this country.
Well,
which it hasn't,
only because we've given him the mic, only because he's in government. I tell you what, if David Seymour was standing on the corner of a street, nobody knew him, speaking his values of what he believes, how many do you think would even listen? You know, we have given this guy space. We have given, in our country, we've given you permission to speak into us. That's what we've done. And now we're going, but we don't want you to speak into us because what you're speaking in is offensive, and it is offensive, and it's causing discord, but still we've allowed him the space. So again, if he was a nobody, because somebody who has got a good vision, a great plan, if that person's like Martin Luther King, right, who could speak it out and the people followed it because they knew it was a truth, right, and so he gained momentum because it was a truth and a heart response. If David Seymour was standing on the corner street shouting out his principles and his values and his belief systems, ain't nobody going to listen, Aaron. I don't even stop long enough to listen.
Yeah.
We have given him the platform.
I'm still looking for that person to be coming in with the positive vision.
Well,
the belief,
get them,
the belief
well, then
that we
put
can
them
work
up against a whole group of people that.
But you don't need to put someone with that vision. They don't need to be against anything. This is my whole point. They've got a positive vision. They're saying,
well, there you go. I'm
disinterested in what's happening over here because I've got this great story here about how we can succeed.
Yeah. Well, then let's put our ears and our eyes in the right places and listen to the people who actually are speaking health and well-being into our founding document, and it's our fault. I have to be honest, it's our fault. We've given him the platform. The news media has given him the platform. How many are venturing over to the Māori King and getting his perspective? How many times are we hearing him on the news? How many radio stations are getting his voice out there and that perspective? So it's our own fault. I don't know why we're allowing it to happen. I wish we could just stop it, you know. Stop giving him the platform.
I personally think it'll take a few years of everyone feeling angry till we get to the point where we're like, I'm really sick of being angry all the time.
Well, my encouragement is keep pushing the other side. Stop giving him, stop empowering him, stop giving him the voice, whether it's over the airways, where it's coming through our TVs, wherever, or on our platforms.
You know what the problem here is, though, is like we've spent half this interview talking about him, and we're kind of, I'm scared that I know we've got our own message, but we are empowering him in a way.
Because we mentioned his name
20 times.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. We shouldn't not mention his name. The guy needs to be known. He is a human being. It's not David Seymour don't need to wipe out David Seymour. Stop giving him the platform for his voice to be heard. You know, like, where's our media coming in and going, actually, there's another voice out there, the Māori King, he's not there for no reason.
David Seymour sells papers.
Māori King will sell papers.
But he's not. That's the reality.
His voice isn't being heard. But has anyone actually watched that guy? The gentle softness, the wisdom that is sitting there. Oh my goodness, David Seymour, you are a baby compared to our Māori King. You're still walking around
in nappies,
as far as I'm concerned, to the wisdom that's in that guy.
That's the problem.
That's what we need to hear, is that where are we going to pull out actually the gems out there that will speak into and bring health and well-being back into us and give us some hope for the future? I just want to put it out there. Don't be hoodwinked, Aotearoa. This is an incredible country. It is fertile as we can grow just about anything here. The world is looking at us like we are the place to be. So be careful what we are getting caught into, because everyone's going to want to come here. This is a beautiful place.
Everyone does want to come
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So more than ever, we need to hold on to our treaty, because if we let that go and big business sees the opportunities of wealth coming into New Zealand, we will get brought out. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. If we don't hang on, it's almost like the...
That's been happening for the last 40 years. And I hate to mention David Seymour again, but his party's policies are exactly those lines, enabling corporations to buy the country out.
We need to, look, take away the voices, the activist voices, and I'm talking about Māori and Pākehā. Take the activist voice out and get the heart back, because you can't fight anger with anger. All we're going to get is civil discord, and we're going to end up fighting each other, and we're going to start looking at each other in ways that are not truthful, not correct. Right? That's what discord does. I can't say it enough. Go to the heart. Go to the one who will speak wealth, health, and goodness back into our country. Stop giving power to the voice that brings discord. Go to the one that actually knows and can bring the treaty together and the principles and what that means in the most wise. Guy's been around a long time. There's a lot of history there. I don't know why we aren't valuing that and giving credit to somebody who's only been here a short time with very little history. I know very little history about David Seymour. Who is he? What is his ancestry? Where does he come from? How does he put his words into Aotearoa and make it so strong that matters, when we are ignoring something that where the roots go deep into this whenua? Deeply. To me, it's a no-brainer, Aaron. To run a country, you've got to have heart. And you got to know what you're sitting on, the gold mine that we're sitting on. Now, some people will see that as a monetary gold mine. Others of us see it as generational wealth in our families and whānau and history and stories and, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well.
Have we?
It is my hope.
I think a part of this is, because there's lots of people at loggerheads, is part of the solution is also finding ways to get along again.
Oh, it's such a beautiful statement. I agree.
But it's really challenging at the moment. I think the only thing I can think of is we pay too much attention to politics. Not saying that it's not important, but there's so many other aspects to our lives.
So many voices that could be risen up, and where we can actually find hope again, and we can get our mana back, we can get our
But it's already there.
Tūranga waiwai back, our place of standing.
We don't have to go anywhere or do anything. Like, we've all got other aspects to our lives that are separate to politics, which don't need to be coloured. Like, we don't need to feel like everything's crashing down around us, because there's so much. We've all got families and friends and don't lose sight of that. And we've got this whole life that's got nothing to do with politics, and we need to go back and just live in that for a while.
Amen.
And get a break from the politics, because that's the trouble with the news, regardless of where you get it from, is it's usually negative, and it can just bring you down. And that's what I worry about. A lot of our discussion is so focused on this negative person, but we have so much going on in our lives. There's community events coming, Whangaroa Talent Factories coming. There's live music. We'll be back once the yard reopens at the start of the month. At the start of this interview, we talked about how live music is growing. People are out there looking for that experience.
Yes, and let's go back there, because I think that's a great place to be, Aaron. People want to be present. Well, no, actually, our younger generation want to be present. They want to experience. Okay, they don't want to look on the internet and see a statement that says we had the best life in the 60s, 70s and 80s because we were doing this, you know, which was the truth. We had no real things, devices. Parents couldn't find us. We used to get on our bike and travel, you know, 10 miles, 20 miles away, you know, and say we were at our friend's house for the day, and nobody could track us down, you know. So
actually, we need to see people – people tend to say, oh, they're young people, they're just going off and playing and having fun and going to concerts. But that's the
What's wrong with that?
Human thing.
It's great.
And we're like, we're more serious because we're talking about politics, but we just talked about how what a negative effect that has on our lives. And young people are keeping away from Facebook because it's full of old people arguing, right? And I and my youngest daughter finally explained something to me that everyone's been asking about why young people aren't into politics. And says, because every time they get into a political discussion, some old person will get angry with them and tell them they're voting wrong. Like, I don't know why none of us have thought of this, but you see an older person ask a young people, have you voted? And then they say, yes, who'd you vote for? And then they tell them why they voted for the wrong person. And they get angry. And the young people are like, I don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
They care about stuff. And you see them doing environmental work and things like that. But they don't want any part of the middle-aged adults' discussions about politics because it's just
because
full of aggro.
Because we've become miserable and angry.
And we should
we are hurting.
And we should actually look to the young people who know still how to have fun and be human.
And it's like anything. It's like being bicultural. We need to be bicultural culture in our age groups as well, bring together the young, the middle and the old, because there is real value in that and the things that the older person already has experienced and knows, the newness of what the young person wants to experience and bring forward.
Yeah. You know, and the enthusiasm.
And the solidness of the middle person that can probably see what all of this looks like and put it all together. You know, we all need to come together in our skill sets and value those different ages and stages we're in. And that's for that part. I think that a coming together of ages is a wonderful thing. Listen to our young people. They are vibrant. They're full of life. They're seeing things that we don't. They want to experience and be involved, and we need to grasp that again too, Aaron. You know, we can get that from our young people by just engaging with them.
This is true. Yeah. All right, Marie, thank you for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
We've been talking to Marie, who's a local counsellor therapist, also does a show on Fridays at 12:30.
12 to 1:30.
That's it. You'd think I'd know. I'm supposed to run the state anyway. We've got 30 or 40 shows, so I get a little confused at times. But thanks for coming in, Marie.
You're welcome.
And end of the show for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.